Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. Or, like I said last week, some of you are probably hanging on for dear life. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. It's April, and the last few months have been pretty chaotic in the markets, whether we're talking trade markets, job markets, investment markets, and prices continue to rise in our shopping markets. Some of you are retired, and you're worried about how far your dollar might stretch. Some of you were hoping to retire, but now nervous about that. And some of you are still working and wondering if you'll ever be able to retire. Last week, we heard from an American financial / retirement planner. This week, I'm talking with a Canadian financial / retirement planner. I enjoy our conversation today because I'm so much better acquainted with our Canadian retirement possibilities and acronyms. I have a whole month planned for you, so next week I chat with a financial therapist. Now that I know what that is, I can assure you they are an important part of our financial puzzle. Finally, in April, my guest is a succession planner. If you're considering leaving the workforce or your business, she has great thoughts on making it as seamless as possible. But first, planning for retirement in Canada. Listen now. To say the world is a strange place, both politically and financially right now, is an understatement. To say the universe works in mysterious ways is not an understatement. I get quite a few retirement planners contacting me, and I try to space them out if I think they have a message for you. However, as I said, the universe works in mysterious ways, so April has become Retirement Planning Month. Last week, you heard from an American financial advisor who works primarily with retiring federal employees. Timely. Today, we'll hear from a Canadian financial planner whose educational brand is Retirement Planning Simplified. My financial planner would tell him he's exactly what I need. Next week, a profession I didn't know existed, but research tells me will help us all out, financial therapy. Figure out where your money stories come from and deal with them so you can plan more effectively. Today, let's spend some time with the Canadian system. As always, these conversations are important and worth your time no matter where you live, as it gives you insights into and questions to ask about the retirement system in your own country. Joseph Curry, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
I'm happy to be here, Agnes.
It's funny, there's a few times in when I have notes that I wish we were doing video, because whenever I say embracing the journey, my hands always go up, and then there's a point at the end too that I'm using my hands as so people can see them.
Well, maybe video's next for you.
yeah, I don't know. We're trying to get people to listen, period. Boomer women to listen, and I keep on encouraging them to just plug in when they go for a walk, you know, so video doesn't help there. Joe, I'm excited to have you here. I know all our Canadian listeners are leaning in, and the retirement curious are listening to see what else they can learn as they approach that time where they live. Let's start at the beginning. What drew you to financial planning, and how did a young man come to focus on retirement planning?
Sure. So my story goes back to probably sometime around the dot-com crash. My dad's actually in this business, a little bit different, his business, but similar. At the time, he was doing a lot of retirement planning. And during that time, anyway, stressful time in markets, you may remember. And he got a phone call from a client. And so he came home that night, and I could see that he was kind of beaming a little bit, like he was happy about something. So I asked what's up. But anyway, he got a phone call that day from a client. She was an elderly widow, and she just called him to say that he was the reason she could sleep at night. And I thought, you know what, that's pretty cool to know that you can, you know, have such a fulfilling job where you're helping people like that. So that's really when I first thought about doing it. So that would be late high school for me at that point. And anyway, so that's kind of the start of the journey. And then further on down the road, I've worked with kind of anybody and everybody, but over time really honed in on this retiree kind of persona, or like client, I guess you could say, or people approaching and making that transition. There's a lot of reasons for it. A big reason was around 2015, 2016, when I came into the specific business I'm in here today, and I ended up buying this business. It was from a retiring advisor, and he already had basically a retirement planning business. So that was kind of already in place, but then I really just fell in love with that type of planning. You know, there's a lot of things that I like about it. I'm not sure if I could dial it in any one thing, but part of it is I just love helping with that transition. It's such a big transition that has so much to do with more than just money, going from working to not working or whatever that transition looks like. It's not always just going to not working. And then just, I mean, talking with our clients, we love our clients. We always have lots of good stories and experiences to share. So it's just, you know, people I like and enjoy being around and talking with. So that also helps. So I think that answers your question from a high level anyway.
Well, and as you were saying that, I'm thinking, and how many grandmas do you have? And you really like them because they bring you chocolate chip cookies. Okay, I'd like to get the hard stuff out of the way right up front.
Sure.
It's really easy to mention politics and the repercussions there, but we also have a homegrown example right now. What would you say to a 62-year-old employee of the Hudson's Bay who suddenly finds them out of or soon to be out of a job?
Yeah, so that's a tough one. I guess it's good to
it's loaded.
Yeah. And it would totally depend. Maybe if we back up a little bit. I think that's, and we've seen this with other companies, Nortel's one that comes to mind, Sears, but this is why for anybody listening, it's so important that you're planning ahead and you're not over reliant just on your company, right? So any company where you have, you know, there's lots of company that has like stock options, right? So I've seen so many people who have built their entire retirement based on the pension of their company and then, and the stocks of their company. And you already have all your eggs in that basket as a worker there. And then if you put all your retirement eggs in that same basket, if it goes well, I mean, it could work out well, but also this is the flip side of that, right? So, I mean, the first thing is you want to talk to somebody who's helped people through that transition in the past, and you want to kind of take stock of where you're at. So it's just getting some clarity around your current situation, like what are the different resources you have in place? And then you want to think about what are your goals? So, you know, were you planning on retiring right now? Are you planning on working for another 10 years? Like, what do you want to see happen? And then once you know where you're at and what you want to see happen, I mean, then you can start taking stock of like, where's the gap? And then that's where planning comes in. Then you can start to fill the gaps through planning. And that's where it gets really personalized, right? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people at Hudson Bay who have done a lot of planning and they're in a good position. And then I'm sure there's a lot that haven't and thought they were going to be there for another several years. And that was going to be the final thing to keep them going. So the specifics are a little tough, but really clarity on where you're at, where you want to go, and then you can start the planning process to figure out how you close the gaps.
One thing I had not even considered, although now that you mention it, I think even my own kids are involved in it, is stock options. So if a company actually folds, does that just disappear?
Well, it's going to depend on the situation, but the stock price could go down to nothing. You'll still have those shares. Mm-hmm. Bondholders are always going to get paid out first, right? So the shareholders, if we own the stock, they're the last people getting any value from the company. So all the debts, the bondholders, they all need to be paid out first. So it's very possible that those shares go down to basically nothing. Yeah. But there's no guarantee. I mean, right now where things are at, I think I'm kind of more headlining, I guess you could see looking at it, but I think that they're going to try to restructure, keep some stores open, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's possible that those shares, you know, lose all their value.
You just reminded me that, oh my goodness, I don't know if it was in the 70s or the 80s. BC put out, we called them brick shares, and everybody got like 5 brick shares. And of course, it's worth 0 now, but I kept mine just for fun. Every once in a while, I remember and I get them out and I chuckle. And it was such a good promise at the time. And I'm sure people bought all sorts of extra ones at the time, too.
Yeah, we kind of come across some interesting ones for sure that are just sitting there with 1 cent values or no values.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's get down to basics. We have CPP, OAS. It's good fun to talk Canadian, I must admit. Tell us about when to draw on those, the grim reality about how far they'll actually go, and then maybe just throw in the GIS as well.
Sure. So at the end of the day, especially CPP, there's not there's not really anything to worry about there. This is not like Social Security in the US. There's a little more concern whether it's going to be there in the future, but we can bank on CPP being there. I can't remember what the latest number was, but I think we're funded something at like 75 years. So we're good with CPP. OAS really comes from general taxes. So it should be like, I don't think it's going anywhere either. So you can bank on those two. And we tell people that those are actually really important decisions on when to take those. A lot of people will tell me, you know what, Joe, I'm just going to take my CPP at age 60. I've been paying the government for, you know, 30 years, and it's time for me to get paid. So I'm taking my CPP. So that's not to say that you should never take it at age 60, but if that's the reasoning for it, you probably shouldn't take it then. You need to think about it into your, like, the broader part of your planning. So there is a massive advantage to delaying your CPP all the way to age 70, not just waiting to 65 to take it, but waiting to age 70. And for a lot of people, I would say the majority of people, that's going to be the best decision. Again, financial planning is very personal and unique to your situation. So I got to make sure I put that out there from a compliance standpoint. But if we're just looking at kind of on average, you should probably delay. So if you think of it, Agnes, most people say, you know, I wish I had that teacher's pension, or I wish I had that government pension, whatever it is, right? And so your CPP basically is that defined benefit pension guaranteed to pay as long as you live, and it increases with inflation as you grow. So what it's buying you today, it's going to buy you tomorrow. It doesn't lose its value. And then on top of that, every year past age 65, you wait, you're getting an extra 8.4% raise on that. It's a guaranteed raise for the rest of your life. So there's no, if there's any financial planners guaranteeing you a better return than that. And then just to add to that, there's inflation on top of that as well. So it's the 8.4% plus inflation. So if anyone's telling you they're going to get better returns than that, then you should probably run. So anyway, long story short here, for most people, you probably want to delay the CPP. Now, old age security, there's still an argument to delay that as well, but most people don't want to delay both. There might be some other reasons to start taking it earlier. This is where really tax planning can get, you know, again, very unique. So for some people, we want to delay old age security, delay CPP, and if you have a large RSP, we might be actually trying to get money out of your RSPs in a lower tax bracket before those other incomes like CPP and OAS kick in. For people who are still working through their 60s, so if you're going to continue working past 65 and you're making a fairly good living, so say you're making some amount of money near that old age security clawback, which is around $90,000 now. Like if there's a chance you're going to get income clawed back, there's no point taking old age security, right? We might as well delay it and get that bonus. So those are some other things to take into consideration. But we always tell people, look, if you need the money, like that's a good reason to take it. If you have no other income sources, you need to take the money, take, like you might want to start it. If your life expectancy is for some reason shorter than, you know, on average, that might be a reason to take these benefits a little bit earlier. There could be other tax reasons you want to take them earlier. So there's probably a million different scenarios here, Agnes, that I could keep going through, but hopefully I'm giving you the impression that this is an important part of planning and looking at the bigger picture of your situation rather than just, it feels right to take it right now, or screw the government, I'm taking it right now. Because at the end of the day, there's a lot more that goes into it than that, or should.
Well, I think too, the one thing that I've noticed about CPP is sometimes, and I don't know if we actually clarified, it's the Canada Pension Plan that you do through your employer. So is a lot of people will look at the range and they'll only see the top number, whereas most of us fall somewhere in between in terms of what we will actually make.
Yeah, that's right. So the average is, I think, somewhere around $800 a month. For CPP, if taken at age 65, but the max is more like $1,400 a month. So people, yeah, they see that, say, $1,400 a month, and that's what they're banking on. But the reality is most people aren't getting that, even if you have a high income earning job, because it's what you've contributed, right? So if you had, you know, if you were in school for a number of years, like university, you weren't earning any income after age 18 for a number of years, like those are years you're not contributing. You can throw out a certain number of years from the calculation, but if you then go ahead and retire before age 65, those are more years that are getting thrown out, right? And if you had some lower income earning years in your earlier working days where you weren't up to the max, even though you were making good money later on. Like, these are all different things that could come into play to make that benefit less than you're expecting.
Well, and I can't remember just what the OAS is right now, but if you consider $800 CPP and is it 700 and some odd, whatever it is, from OAS, it's like, if you're just thinking that, oh, I'm going to quit my job because I've got these pensions coming in, you're not going to make enough to live on, probably in most places in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the common retirement mistakes I just had on a recent YouTube video, is just thinking the government's going to take care of you. So you mentioned GIS, like there is some additional benefits there that can come from GIS, but you're only getting those if your income's under a certain amount, right? And that's also getting clawed back. So I don't have the exact numbers on that, but we're talking about, you know, like incomes under $18,000. I think it's the number somewhere around there. So it's, to your point, for most people, that's not going to be enough to live on. For some people, it might be. So, I mean, I'm not sure who all's listening right now, but on average in Canada, a household in retirement is going to be somewhere between $60,000 and $75,000 a year of expenses. That's an average. So again, there's going to be lots of people who are less than that, but there's going to be lots of people who are more than that as well, right? So for most people, if they're planning on the government's benefits, OAS and CPP taking care of them, it's not going to probably work out.
Right. And the other thing with GIS, of course, is it's based on last year's income tax. So, you know, basically when you first retire, last year's income tax was based on your earnings with the job. So you won't qualify for that first year anyways.
Yeah, so exactly. Everything will be calculated off like the next year's income. So there's going to be a gap there most likely. It's a complicated system. Things don't always work out the way people expect.
Well, I mean, first of all, people need to understand that, yeah, the government's not going to take care of you completely. But also, you know, like, this is the reason people should come and talk to you. It's so important.
Yeah, ideally, when you're working with someone for retirement planning, we're not just creating an investment plan, right? I think a lot of people, from their experiences with what they would consider a financial planner, is they got an investment plan and then they think that's what a financial planner does. But I would call that more of an investment advisor, right? But ideally for your retirement, you're looking at how do all these different pieces, you know, connect together, right? Like from figuring out your cash flow, from figuring out the order of withdrawals, if you have RSPs or RIFs and TFSAs and non-registered accounts, if you're lucky enough to have all those different resources, like what are you taking first, or, you know, how are you managing that? And then, yeah, when are you turning on these other income sources like your CPP and your OAS? There's so many variables. And then there's also the estate planning side of things, managing the risks that may or may not happen or come up. So there's a lot of pieces that really go into the planning.
We also have other vehicles in Canada, and I'll have you address those too. There's RRSPs, TFSAs, RIFs, LIFs. I'm going to stop there before I show off that I can't keep the latter two straight. Tell us about those, and are there others?
Sure. So if we look at our RSPs as our traditional retirement savings vehicle, right? So while we're working, a lot of people are putting money into their RRSP. The reason that that's a good thing, and I'm going to address this too, I think it's important, because a lot of people say, you know what, I hate RSPs, I know I'm going to have to pay all this tax later, or I settled my parents' estate and there was a big tax bill on the RSPs, I'm never putting money into that. So just to make sure I clarify that, what happens is, just we'll use some easy numbers. If you make $100,000 a year, if you put $10,000 into an RSP while you're working, you pay income tax on $90,000 of income, not the $100,000 you earned, right? Because you get a deduction. And then while that money's in your RSP, it's going to grow tax deferred. So what that means is any interest, any dividends, any capital gains, you're not paying tax on any of that while it's in that account. You do pay tax on the withdrawals. So that's why if you take money out of your RSP, you have to pay tax. Now there's going to be a withholding tax based on the size of the withdrawal. But at the end of the day, you're going to get taxed on your marginal tax rate. So that's the top tax rate that you're in. For most people, though, they're going to be making less money in retirement than they are while they're working. So if we think about that, we put money into the RSP, we get a deduction, so we don't pay any tax on that money that went in there. It grows tax deferred, and then when we take it back out at that higher amount that had grown tax-free or tax deferred, we're taking it back out in a lower tax bracket when we pay tax on it. So RSPs are really good deal still. I just want to make sure we're clear on that because that's a big misconception. Now, if you want to take income from an RSP, though, you typically can't set up like an automatic withdrawal or anything like that. Some companies or banks will charge you a deregistration fee every time you take money of your RSP. So, and eventually you can't keep it in there. You have to move it over to what we call a RIF, or Registered Retirement Income Fund. And the RIF, unlike the savings plan, the RSP, it's basically the same account, still growing tax deferred in there, but it's designed for income, for you to take money out. And the government tells you how much you have to take out every year once you move your money to a RIF. Now, you have to move it to a RIF by age 71, and you have to take a minimum out by age 72. But there's reasons you might want to do that earlier. For example, anytime after age 65, RIF income is considered pension income. So that means if you have a spouse, you can split that income, which can help you get you into a lower tax bracket. You'll also qualify for the pension tax credit, which gets you a couple thousand dollars out of your RIF tax-free every year, which you wouldn't get if it's still in an RSP, right? So there's reasons why we might want to have a RIF before the government forces us to. And again, that's where tax planning comes in. So that's the RSP and RIF are very interconnected. The RSP is for what you're working and saving. The RIF is for when you need income. TFSAs, you don't get that tax deduction. You put the money in after tax. So you've paid your tax on the money, you put it in there, but now it grows tax-free. And when you take it out, it's tax-free again. So tax-free savings accounts are great. And if there was the exact same income in retirement and while you're working, it really doesn't matter if you do an RSP or a TFSA, they kind of work out the same. So tax-free savings accounts though are really good for flexibility. So I'll give you an example. We had a couple, they retired. The wife was still working. She was going to work to get her full pension to 65. She worked on the school board. The husband ended up retiring early, but she was making enough money for the household expenses, and he had a bunch of money in his RSPs. So what we actually did was, while he had no income, is we would take money each year up to a certain amount, keeping them in a low tax bracket, out of the RSP, and we put it into the tax-free savings account. So this is going back a while now. But now they're both retired. She's been retired for a few years, and this year they needed to buy a car. So if all that money had still been in the RSPs and they wanted to buy a car and pay cash for it, there would have been a big tax bill to take that lump sum. But we were able to do that by planning ahead. So all that money, or a big chunk of money sitting in the tax-free savings account, he could take that out, pay no tax on it, purchase the vehicle without having to finance it. It was a used vehicle, so financing was going to be super high. So anyway, they've paid for that, and then we'll slowly replenish that over time, right? So that tax-free savings account is an important account to give you flexibility in retirement. So now, are there other vehicles? Yeah, so there's just non-registered accounts. These are just accounts that, you know, if you've maxed out your tax-free savings accounts, and either you've maxed out RSPs, or you can't put money in there anymore because you now have RIFs or whatever it is, you can still invest this in stocks or ETFs or mutual funds or whatever it is. In non-registered accounts, the only thing with those are there's no tax, preferential tax treatment. So, you know, you're going to pay tax on the dividends when you get paid the dividends. You're going to pay tax on any interest from like bonds or GICs. And then on stocks, if there's capital gains, when you sell those stocks or those mutual funds or ETFs, whatever it is, if there's a gain, you're going to pay that capital gains tax right away. None of it's sheltered. So that's kind of where excess funds are going to go. But if you've had a pension in the past and you move money out of that pension, it probably went into some kind of locked-in retirement account. So in Ontario and in a lot of provinces, it would be a LIRA, locked-in retirement account. But there's locked-in RSPs. There's different names for it and within some of the different provinces. But at the end of the day, basically what it is it's pension money that was moved out of a pension when you switched careers, switched jobs at some point. And the government, instead of having just a minimum like a RIF where you have to take out a certain amount, once you move it into the income fund, so a LIRA would go into a LIF, a locked in income fund, there is going to be a minimum just like the RIF, but there's also going to be a maximum. And the idea behind that is trying to make that money last over time like it would have as the pension. So that's another account we might see. Again, those are related. LIRA and LIF would be the two most common there. But then there's also other income sources like actual pensions, right? There's two types of pensions. There's the defined benefit pension, which I mentioned earlier. That's like your teacher's pension, government pensions. This is where the risk is on the employer. So you go to work, you get credited service. You and the employer are probably both contributing here. But at the end of the day, when you retire, based on how many years you've been there and what your income was, you're going to have a predefined benefit that you get paid in retirement. So that's where it's a defined benefit. And the risk is on the employer there. Whereas more and more commonly what we see now is the defined contribution plan. And the defined contribution pension plan means that your employer is going to contribute to a pension for you. And they're probably going to do some kind of matching. Like they might put in a minimum amount. And if you put in some, they might match that to get you more money in there, which is all great. But then you're responsible for the investment decisions. And whatever's in that account when you go ahead and retire, like that's what you're building your retirement income out of, right? So it's a lot like an RSP. It's just done through your employer. And the risk and the defined contribution is on you. So defined contribution, meaning the employer is telling you how much they're going to put in. Like this is the amount we're going to put in every year. And if you add some more, this is the amount that we're going to match, but that's it. Once it's in there, it's on you to then take care of it. And if you mismanage it, then that's not on us, that's on you. So I think I'm hitting like the main retirement income sources. The other one I always throw out there is employment income. So just because you retired from your career doesn't mean you might not maybe do some consulting for the company you worked with, or maybe there's some kind of side gig that you had interest in and you've never, you know, felt comfortable doing it because you didn't have financial independence, but maybe now you can afford to jump into something like that and actually get some income. Or maybe you just love people so much that you're going to take some kind of a greeter job or work at Home Depot or whatever it is, just so you can talk to people and help people. So that's a very common retirement income source. Even though it's work, it's just kind of thinking of work as a different goal, more just for some purpose, some social aspects, and maybe a little extra spending money.
You mentioned, I think it was a client where after they passed, the executor realized that there was this big tax hit on like the plans that the parent or whoever had. Mm-hmm. Personally, I have a small life insurance policy that will take care of exactly that, like any tax hit. Is there anything else that somebody could do to alleviate the tax hit? Because that has to be paid up front, right? It's not when the estate settles. It's like right now, these money's coming out of these accounts, so the taxes have to be paid.
Yeah, the taxes are going to need to be paid by the estate. There's going to be like a final income tax return and then potentially an estate return if there's income in the estate. But yeah, those need to get paid. So there's different things. So yeah, life insurance to take care of that is one way to do it. Now, keeping in mind, if you don't have life insurance, it just means that your beneficiaries are going to get less money, right? So if there's no money there, there's going to be no tax, right? If there's no money in your RSP, you're not going to get a tax bill from the RSP. So, but a lot of people will say, yeah, you know what? I want to keep my estate whole. So kind of here's my projected tax hit when I pass away. So I'm going to get enough life insurance to take care of that tax so that my beneficiaries keep my whole estate. So that's one way of doing it. For others who are maybe philanthropic or have some kind of causes that are really close to their heart, maybe they will actually leave some money in their will, or there's different ways. It could be through life insurance, could be through your will, where you leave money as a donation to a charity. And then the estate will get a charitable tax receipt to offset some of the taxes in the estate, right? So that can be, you know, planned out to take care of the taxes or a portion of the taxes. So that's another thing that you could do. Then there's things more proactive planning earlier on in retirement. We could look at something like an RRSP meltdown. This is where we want to try to make sure we have all the money out of the RSPs and the RIFs before we pass away. And so we might be looking at managing our tax brackets throughout retirement and taking more money than we need to spend out of those accounts, not to spend it, but just to move it over to tax-free savings accounts or non-registered accounts. So by the time that we end up passing away, there's actually no tax left in those accounts, which are going to be our biggest tax hit, right? There will still be taxes on our non-registered investments, but they're going to be more tax favorable on the estate, right? Now, that's not for everybody. For some people who are just trying to spend as much as they can of what they built up over their lifetime, which there's nothing wrong with, by the way, there's a good chance like it might make sense to keep that money tax deferred as long as possible. So again, that's where the planning comes in and understanding your goals. If your goals are, if you know you're okay and your goal is to leave a certain amount of money for your heirs, like that might make more sense in RSP Meltdown. Where if you are like, you know what, I don't have kids, or you know what, I looked after my kids for 25 years or whatever it is, I don't care, whatever's left over, like they're taken care of, then maybe, you know, it makes sense to defer because you want to get as much tax deferred growth in that account to create future spending for you in the future. So again, it's going to be very personal, but those are some different scenarios that you might consider on, you know, how are you going to manage that tax bill.
And I just got to say that I really appreciate having people like you, for people like me to come to and talk to. I don't need glasses. I wear them so you can't see my eyes glazing over.
Yeah, no doubt.
I feel like we should have warned everybody to grab a pencil and paper before we started. Yeah, I really hope there's so many options out there. And as I say, I really appreciate people like you who, I mean, jeepers, you don't have notes even, you're just doing this. Going to the other side of it now, you talk about common retirement planning mistakes. Could you address some of those, please?
Sure. So one we already talked about is relying on the government when you get to retirement. So that's a mistake for sure. Another one would be taking specifically your CPP too early, or not considering your CPP as part of a plan, but rather just taking it because it's available. So that is definitely a common mistake. And for most people, again, taking it early is not going to be the best option. Not that it never is, but for most people, it's not. So we want to make sure we're planning around that. Another big one is underestimating our retirement expenses. So a lot of people, when they're, you know, they might be doing planning and they might be planning to a certain goal, you don't want to spend X number of dollars per year, X number of dollars per month in retirement. But they might be basing that off some rule of thumb that they read about. And the problem with rules of thumb is that it's just a rule of thumb. It's not for you specifically, right? So when it comes to cash flow planning, what we want people to do is think about what are you spending today? So look at, you know, what's coming out of your bank account. If you look back over a year, every month's different. And the reason I have people actually go back, look at their bank account, see what's coming out is because if I just ask someone, you know, what are your monthly expenses, or bring me your monthly expenses, even if they have time to prepare for this, they'll come in and say, you know, well, I spend like $50 for heat, and I spend, you know, X number of dollars on utilities, and my property taxes are this. And I don't know, there might be two or three other like obvious things, but they forget that they actually eat every week and they need to buy groceries, and that they, you know, have some social activities that they do, and they cost money, and they like to go out for dinner with friends, and they like to travel. Like, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but everyone, when I say what are your monthly expenses, everyone just, or just expenses in general, everyone just goes to those like bare necessity expenses that they see show up every month. So what we want to do is not do that, because that will blow up your plan. We want to look at how much is actually coming into your bank account every month, and then how much is actually left over. So if someone has, I don't know, $5,000 a month coming into their bank account, and let's just say that, you know, they spend $100 a month on commuting costs, and they have, another $500 a month going to their retirement savings, and they have another $1,000 a month going to a mortgage that's going to be gone in retirement. So that's $1,600 of expenses that will not be there in retirement. So if we know you're spending $6,000, and we take out the $1,600, which puts us at what, $4,400. So now we know, okay, you're actually spending $4,400 a month, whether it's on food, whether it's on, I don't know, property tax, whatever, it doesn't really matter. We know that after the things that are going to disappear in retirement are gone, it's $4,400 a month is what you're actually spending. So we don't want to bank on less than that for your retirement expenses, because I don't know about you, Agnes, but the day I spend the most money is on Saturday. And when you get to retirement, for a lot of people, every day is Saturday. So we're not going to be spending less money, right? And then you also need to start thinking about, and this might not go on for all of retirement, right? This might taper off over time, but, you know, do you have other goals? Like, you want to start traveling, you never had the opportunity, or you want to do more traveling, or are there new hobbies or other, you know, activities you're going to be taking on, they're going to cost money? Are these going to be excess expenses? So we need to start building that back in too. So I went pretty deep down that hole on the mistake, but it's because I see it time and time again where people say, I'm just going to spend this, but the reality is they're going to spend way more than that. And I've been doing it long enough now that I see the before and the after, that when we're doing planning, we have to dive deeper. We're not just taking the number off the top of our head, because we know it's probably going to be wrong.
I actually created an Excel spreadsheet, and it sort of covers a basic month by the week, and I break it down, like everything to from like the big expenses, like your rent or your mortgage, down through your utilities to magazines to gym classes that you might go to you know, birthday presents for the grandchildren, all that sort of stuff. And it sort of sums it up at the bottom. You can, when you're working, it's really easy to plug in your income each month. But then it also auto loads down below where you can then plug in how much you're going to make in retirement. And if the number goes red, then you get to go back up and say, okay, like I have to live without the magazines. I have to live without this. I have to live without that, whatever. But it's really handy and it's eye opening. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Another thing we tell people to do is, you know, once a year, just do an audit of your expenses, because nowadays we have so many subscriptions that we forgot we signed up for. We had a free trial or whatever it is. So if you just go once a year, you're probably just going to find money by canceling things you're not using. Right. And if you're not sure if you need something, just cancel it anyway. And then if you miss it, then you can always add it back in, right? But cash flow is a big one. And having the spreadsheet is great, but the problem is that most people don't do it, or they'll do it for like a month and then they'll stop doing it, and things get missed. But if you have the time and you have the patience to go through that process, then yeah, that's ideal, because then you can see exactly where you're spending. And then that's when you maybe having a little more clarity on what you're spending your money on can make it a little easier to figure out where you can save some money, right? So, yeah.
Well, and I think now too, you know, you can tap that card, you can tap your phone, and you've bought something.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to lose track of exactly what you're spending money on it when every day is Saturday.
Yeah, or if you just want something right now, like you just jump on Amazon, or like you don't even have to leave your home to shop. So it makes it a lot harder to manage your spending, because it's just so easy to impulsively buy, right? At least if I had to go out to the grocery store and it's something I don't really need, then I might forget about it by the time I get to the grocery store. But if I could just do it on Amazon, then it can happen right now.
We won't talk about the number of times I go to the grocery store and forget what I do need. Okay. I think we've covered part of this, but you have a question. Can I eliminate or reduce any threats to my retirement? Is that part of what we've just been talking about?
Yeah. So a lot of that will then come into also your investment planning, right? Like your investment portfolio is going to look different in retirement and in the years leading up to retirement than it did while you were saving and working and, you know, had some career stability. So part of that is how you're going to manage some of that risk. Part of it is having a withdrawal plan. So I tell people that having a projection that says you can spend X number of dollars isn't really a plan. It's a good starting point. It, you know, gives you some clarity on where you stand today. But the problem with those is we don't know how long you're going to live. We don't really know what your returns are going to be. We don't know what inflation is going to be. And even if we get the returns right, the problem is that your investments are not going to have a straight line return. They're going to go have good years and bad years. And so if you get more bad years at the start of retirement and the good years later, it doesn't matter if you already spent all your money that the good years came later, because it's not going to come back, right? So we need to have a plan for how do we manage, we call that sequence of returns. Some people are lucky, they get a good sequence of returns. Like, you know, if you retired in the mid 2010s, like, overall things have been pretty good. So you probably are further ahead now than what your projection had said, right? But if you retired in 2006, then that's probably kind of threw your retirement plan out pretty quick if you didn't have a plan for how you were going to address that. And then there's other things like, you know, if it's a married couple, if my partner has a pension and that income disappears if something happens to them, like, do we still have enough money coming to the household for just me? Or, you know, what if I end up in long-term care? I don't want to be dependent on my kids. So how am I going to manage that expense? What does that look like for me? So managing those, again, a lot of it is just really thinking about what are all the things that could go wrong and how are we going to manage those things if they happen? And so for most people, hopefully we don't have to worry about them, but I mean, life happens. That's why we plan, right? So, and the other thing I always tell people is planning is not an event. It's not like a one-time thing. We have to start somewhere. So there's usually an initial plan, but really it's an ongoing process.
You can answer this better than I can. I know my financial planner gets in touch with me a couple of times a year. I understand at least once a year is a responsibility obligation for you folks. Is
it? Depends on the regulator. There could be like some obligations are, I know your client update once every 3 years, ideally that's not what's actually happening. So, I mean, some have to be once a year, depending on the type of portfolio they have. But at the end of the day, hopefully your planner has a more regimented process, right? So for our clients, we meet all of our clients every spring and every fall. And it's a rotating schedule where we kind of go through different parts of the financial planning process. So once someone's onboarded, they're a client, we've done all their planning and all those different areas we talked about, then we're always looking at cash flow, investments. And then in those meetings, we're also, you know, like every other meeting, we'll be looking at some of those risk factors we talked about. And then we'll be looking at your estate planning. And then we'll be looking at like maybe a deeper dive back into the cash flow. So we just kind of rotate through all the financial planning topics once we have it set up. But we're seeing our clients again, that's every spring and every fall. And then it also having that regimented schedule allows us flexibility in here. So when clients have emergencies, that we have other times and parts of the year where we can just get people in here and take care of it. So the twice a year is what we want to see everybody. And then as life changes happen, then we're going to see people on different occasions as well. So that's not a requirement though, to your point a minute ago. That's just our process. Every advisor probably has their own process. I'm sure a lot are similar to that. As far as what the regulator does, like if you're only seeing clients because the regulator says you have to, that's probably not ideal.
Okay. You used the term right at the beginning about sleeping soundly at night. Let's get into some positive things.
Sure.
So for those people who aren't panicking about impending layoffs, you have something called your Retirement Navigator. What is that?
Yeah. So the Retirement Navigator is just a really good place to start as you're thinking about your retirement planning and thinking about what that next stage is going to look like. So what I didn't talk about, I talked about goals, but I didn't talk about values. So really where we like to start the retirement planning conversation is actually values first. Because if we're clear on our values, it can act as like a filter then for our goals and how we spend money. And then that way, if our goals are kind of, you know what, we can kind of meet our goals, but there's a few things that we might, you know, we're maybe going a little over on spending. We can really start to dial that in and be like, okay, well, is this really aligned with their values? And that's kind of where that filtering process comes in. But for a lot of people, it's also figuring out, you know, how are we going to get purpose in retirement? You know, maybe my identity is really tied up in my career, or maybe as a business owner. And when someone asked me what I did or who I was, I'm a business owner. And so if you're going to let that go, that can be a really big step, and it can be a very challenging step for a lot of people. So again, getting clear on our values can be the first step in helping us identify, you know, what's that next stage in life going to look like for us. So the Navigator, what it does is we have an exercise in there that starts with helping you define your values. Because most people, if I just ask, what are your values? They don't really know. They maybe have an idea, but this is an exercise that helps people dial down into that. Then it explains the goal setting process in a little more detail, has a worksheet for that. And then it starts going into some of the other aspects that we talked about, like cash flow planning, understanding your retirement income sources, and basically goes through the retirement planning process. So some of it is more hands-on, like workbook type pages, and then some of it is more high level, like here's the other things that you need to get some advice on or start thinking about. So it's really a good place, even if someone's thinking about talking to a financial advisor. If you work through that, I know a lot of people don't talk to financial advisors, and this is really why I started the podcast and our education site, is because I know a lot of people think that our industry is maybe a little stuffy and maybe looks down on people who don't know things about money. And so what I really want to do is make our industry more approachable to people. And so I know that when people have kind of a base knowledge, they feel more comfortable talking to somebody about their money because they don't feel like they're going to be embarrassed or judged. And so that Navigator is a great tool for that. Podcasts, I mean, any way you can kind of educate yourself, it just makes it easier to have those conversations. And also know that if you talk to somebody, you're getting good advice, because, you know, if you go through the Navigator and then you talk to a planner and they don't talk about any of that stuff, there might be something missing there.
I want to emphasize too that I know that the first time I probably talked to a financial planner was 40 years ago when my first child was born. And I found that he talked to my then husband and they were deciding our future. And you know, there's so many people like you out there now who are well aware, because our audience is primarily boomer women, who are well aware that they may come into your office not sure what's going on, and you can do a little bit of hand holding. You can explain things, as you've done today. Holy crikey, you blew me away. but you know, sort of more sensitive, shall we say, to an older woman who this might be brand new for her at this stage of the game, sort of figuring out what's going on and what there is because her husband has passed on or something like that.
Yeah, so you never want to not get advice because you feel like you don't know what you need to do. So just talking to somebody and asking questions. And so we have a lot, I mean, actually a lot of our clients that come to us are couples, but maybe the husband's been looking after everything on their own. They've never had a planner. And they're actually just worried about what happens if something happens to me. And really, in those meetings, we're spending most of our time talking to their spouse and educating them and letting them know what's going on. And it's not so much that the other spouse needs a planner. They just want to have that kind of bridge in place if something happens. And then also, I mean, we have a really large chunk of our clients actually are widows or divorcees, women who, like, they want someone to help walk through this. So it's, a big part of what we do in our meetings is really is education and making sure we're asking questions and making sure that everyone's on the same page.
And if a person walks into someone's office, sits down and 10, 15 minutes in realizes that I don't want to deal with this person, they don't need to. They are not committed just because they've sat in the chair.
No, and you should, like, you don't ever want to work with someone who's managing your future, your investments, if you don't feel comfortable with them. That would be like the number one. Yeah. Like, if there's any kind of hesitancy or red flag there, then, I mean, there's lots of options.
Yeah. I just wanted to touch on that while we were talking about.
And maybe the other thing I'll add on that, Agnes, is if you are with somebody and you already have all your money there, like, you don't have to stay there either, right? You can always transfer things out. And if you go to another advisor, they'll be able to tell you if there's any kind of fees to move from whatever and educate you. Like, you don't have to talk to the advisor you're with if you're uncomfortable asking those questions. Another advisor can look at your statements and tell you, you know what, like, you're probably going to have these fees, or actually you can move, there's no fees. And in most cases, especially nowadays, because they've got rid of some of the fees that tie people up, in most cases, it's not that expensive to change. There'll be a little bit of cost there, but it's not, for most people, it's not going to be a deciding factor.
Well, and interestingly, now that you mentioned that, my financial planner that I have now, she had to do all of that looking at what I had because my previous financial planner had passed away. She had cancer. And so, you know, just taking that view of, okay, this is what you've got. If we do this, it's going to cost you that, like all that sort of stuff. I'd forgotten how valuable that was.
Yeah, you want to know the options and the current situation as it is and how different decisions you make are going to affect how things move forward.
Right. Now, you talk about transitioning from saving to spending. Is that a big mindset? Wouldn't be a big mindset for me, but that's okay. Is that a big mindset thing for some of your clients?
Yeah, I would say that over half of our meetings really are not talking to our retirees about, hey, you're spending too much. It's, hey, you worked hard, you sacrificed, you saved this money so that one day you'd have financial freedom and be able to do all the things you've always dreamt about, and you're not spending any money. So we need to spend more money. So it's usually one or the other. Like, we have our clients, again, they've underestimated their expenses, like we talked about earlier, and there's always something else they need to spend money on that doesn't fit into the plan. But a good chunk of our clients are the exact opposite. Is they were really good savers. You know, they've done well. They have more money than they ever thought they would have. But that getting them to go from saving to spending is just, it's such a mindset shift that some people just can't make. And so, again, part of what we try to do with those clients is break down our planning in simplified ways to just show them, like, look, if you spend this much more, and kind of show them how things go, like, you're still okay. Your spouse is still going to be okay. You're still going to leave things to your kids. So it's a big part of what we do really is just trying to educate people on how they can spend more money. I tell that to some people and they say, I don't even know how that's a thing. I have more trouble stopping spending, but, but for some people.
Well, that was my auntie though. Once she got this much money in the bank after the sale of her house, it was like, she needed to know it was there. And I mean, she was also, Depression war era person, but it was so hard, and it was heartbreaking too. I'd say, Auntie, you've got the money, like buy yourself this, or treat yourself to that, or get someone to help you with this. And it was like, no, that number couldn't go below a certain threshold. And yeah, it was, as I said, it was heartbreaking.
Well, and what I'll add to that is I do see that as more of an issue for the like older generations, not boomers. Like boomers are they want to be more active, they want to travel more, they're doing things, but it's kind of that generation before that still has, remembers the Great Depression. I think there's other factors that are coming into play there, right? That makes that tougher to let go.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that people should know about?
Oh, we hit on a lot of things. I think really it's just understanding, and for some people this seems so obvious, but for a lot of people, I don't think it is. It's just understanding that an investment plan is not a financial plan or a retirement plan, right? And just making sure that you're really considering all the pieces that go into retirement, which is everything from the non-financial to how am I going to get purpose and fulfillment? Like, what's going to get me out of bed in the morning, give me routine? How am I going to keep all the, that social aspect of my life that maybe I got from work in the past, which is very important when you're no longer working. So right there through, yeah, your investments, but really it starts more with your goals. What are we trying to achieve? And then that's where the finances come in behind that. Okay, well now how do we make those goals happen? How do we make sure you're not paying too much tax? How do we make sure this passes on to the next generation in a tax efficient way? How do we make sure nothing derails your retirement? We talked about timing of CPP, OAS. So there's so many different factors, and it's not just about who has the best investment strategy. I think that's probably what I would like to leave our listeners with, because it's the most common thing I run into is thinking an investment plan is a retirement plan.
Okay, you mentioned your podcast. Tell us about your podcast.
Sure. So Your Retirement Planning Simplified is the podcast. It's on our YouTube channel, Retirement Planning Simplified as well, which is actually growing pretty quickly. And as I mentioned, one of our in here our, internally our core values, one of them is approachability, and that's the whole reason behind the podcast. The YouTube channel is about making retirement planning more approachable to people. And it's, as the name says, simplified, as we're trying to take these more complex topics. Now, I know I gave you a lot today because we're cramming a lot into a short amount of time, but we try to take all these things I've talked about today and we look at them and break them down more, try to simplify them more, and we'll have expert guests on as well. And we talk about a lot of the non-financial things that I was just mentioning. So, where are we getting purpose? How are we staying active? Like all those things are part of the podcast as well. And really, it's just for people, I would say mostly people who are either early in retirement or getting close to retirement, to make sure that they're, taking into account all the things they need to start thinking about as they make that transition.
Well, and I'll vouch for that because I was browsing through both your podcast and your blog, and it was like, oh, and it was just like this one small subject, and it's like, oh, I want to learn about that, or I want to read, what you have to say about that. So yeah, I can really vouch for the fact that you really niche down into specific topics.
I'm glad you found something interesting there. So yeah, like you can find it all on the Your Retirement Planning Simplified is the podcast, but if you just go retirementplanningsimplified.ca, then you'll find it all there.
Okay, and that was my next question, where we find you on the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
So it's retirementplanningsimplified.ca.
Yeah, that's the website, which you'll see the blogs as you've seen on there. You'll also be able to see the you'll so you on the website you'll be able to see the blogs. You'll be able to see the podcast, a link to the podcast in there. The blogs usually have a lot of our YouTube channels, but Retirement Planning Simplified on YouTube, that's honestly our fastest growing thing. People seem to be loving YouTube lately. So I don't know if it's the visual piece there. I know you mentioned getting your listeners to listen while they're walking. For me, if I'm running, walking, exercising in the car, I love listening, but more and more people seems are loving the video. So we have a lot going on there.
Well, you don't have to pay to stream YouTube most of the time.
True.
There you go. What else was? Oh, you have a course at Trent. Do you have a course online for people, or is that what the Retirement Navigator is?
So the Retirement Navigator, you can find. So, well, Lindsay could give you a copy for your readers if they want to get it from you, or also if it's on retirementplansimplified.ca. If you go on there, you can click Get the Navigator, and you'll be able to find it there. And we do have a Trent workshop we're doing. Actually, it's a Saturday, so it's not online, though. No. We might in the future bring it online or do something similar. But right now, yeah, it's in person at Trent University. And we just did a couple nighttime ones. So like a part one, part two at night. It went really well. So now we're trying a weekend one. And it seems like we have a pretty good turnout for that. But we don't have it online, so it's not available for everybody yet.
Okay. And there's one other last question is, you are in Ontario, Peterborough.
Yep.
And can you work with people anywhere across Canada, or do you have to stay in Ontario?
Yeah. So right now we have clients in Alberta and Saskatchewan and PEI in Ontario. And so technically I'm not registered in the other provinces right now, but if somebody comes along, we can get registered.
Oh, okay. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Absolutely.
Leafs or Sens? Or are you going to surprise me?
No, it's the Leafs. No surprise. I don't like when people ask me that question, though, because I have to say it out loud.
Well, you're closer to Toronto. And for anybody who couldn't read or understand the Canadian, it's the Maple Leafs or the Ottawa Senators, two hockey teams. And you still play hockey, I take it, do you?
Oh, yeah, I still play a couple times a week. But, yeah, I did play. Now it's most of my time at arenas is my kids. They're, I guess, one's turning six and one just turned eight. So that's a big part of my arena time. And actually, you mentioned the Leafs Sens. That was their Christmas present this year. My wife and I took them to a Leafs game in Ottawa, so playing the Sens. So that was a lot of fun. Okay. They loved it.
They're right at that age. I'm sure they were just wired beyond belief.
Yeah, they've been asking for a couple of years to go. But my youngest, I was just always afraid he was going to fall asleep. But anyway, he made it through this one, so we were good.
Oh, that was great. Okay, your website link is in the show notes. And all the links, like YouTube, everything, will be on your page at our website.
Perfect.
Listeners, if you're a Canadian, are you feeling okay about your retirement savings, your retirement plans? Are you concerned, or in Joe language, are you losing sleep at night? Non-Canadians, retirement planning might have different acronyms where you live, and we sure fired off a lot of those today, Joe. I'd love to hear your story. Maybe I could get an advisor from your country on. If you have thoughts on today's show, please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or was there a specific question I didn't ask, Joe? Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. At our age, retirement is closer than it was 25 years ago. With the global uncertainties right now, fretting and expecting the worst is easy. Getting good information is so much more productive. Your friends may not want to put their concerns out there. This conversation with Joe might get them to take action in a positive direction. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button and help us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you get notified every time an episode is released. A quick reminder that last week's guest was an American retirement planner, and next week we get a free hour on the couch with a financial therapist. Joe Curry, thank you for being my guest today and putting a Canadian light on retirement, the planning, the saving, the spending, the whole shoot and match. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm glad I could be here today. I guess thanks for having me.
Thank you. Have a great rest of week.
You too.